That's the sound of a major offensive underway in the Iraqi city of Tikrit, this time led by Iraqi forces with allied Shia militia in an attempt to retake the city from the self-proclaimed Islamic State. The operation is the largest to date for the Iraqi government in the fight against ISIS, and how that battle against ISIS is going will be the subject of testimony today from the Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey. But there are already signs of success in the battle for Tikrit, according to Anne Bernard, Beirut bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times, reporting from Baghdad.
Since last night, Iraqi forces have been inside Tikrit city, deep inside the city, according to security officials. But it still could be a while before they declare the city completely taken, partly because there's still fighting with Islamic State militants near the palaces of Saddam Hussein, which is also the site of the massacre of more than 1,000 Shiite soldiers earlier, which is one of the reasons why this battle has such a huge emotional significance in Iraq. Even when they, if they manage to clear out all the fighters and there's no more resistance, it will still be a matter of clearing improvised bombs and other hazards from the city before they declare it cleared.
And as you describe those booby traps, et cetera, a lot of strategic observers were saying in advance of this offensive that on some level, Tikrit would have to be destroyed to be liberated. What's the assessment of where the city stands in terms of its livability in any sense right now?
It's hard for us to get a sense exactly of what's going on inside the city of Tikrit until journalists are able to go there and independently survey the scene. In the villages surrounding Tikrit, there's been imagery on Iraqi television stations and on social media of one village, Albu Ajil, with many shops and houses in flames. A militiaman appears to say, or a soldier appears to say, burn them, burn them. So perhaps there was some revenge attacks on property going on there. It's hard to tell. On the other hand, in the village of Al-Alam, on the other side of Tikrit, we just spoke to the mayor, and he said that there was no destruction by the Iraqi forces. In fact, there was burning done by the Islamic State militants as they fled and fought. So again, it will be hard to assess how much destruction there is and who's responsible until we can get inside.
Emotionally, you describe that this is an important objective for this coalition here. I'm wondering if the Sunni component of that coalition will view the taking of Tikrit as something that the Shia have done as a favor, as something that suggests there's solidarity here. Will the Sunnis be more likely to be allied with the Shia in this Iraq military because Tikrit is such an emotional, ancestral home of the Sunni strongholds in the old days?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, there's been a lot said about fears that excesses by the conquering militias could have the opposite effect, could worsen sectarian tensions in the country. But there is a possibility as well that the Sunni locals will be so glad to be rescued from the Islamic State that it could have a beneficial effect in uniting Sunni and Shia in Iraq against the Islamic State, which has been destroying the livelihoods and lives of everybody.
What's the status of U.S. air support and any sense that boots were even close to the ground there in Tikrit?
Well, the prime minister's spokesman was just quoted on ABC saying, in fact, there was a contribution from the United States in the sense that they bombed Islamic State supply routes, which helped the overall operation. I'm not clear if that is anywhere near Tikrit. I think he may be referring to airstrikes elsewhere in the country that nonetheless helped to prevent reinforcements from coming to Tikrit. We're also hearing that Iraqi forces called in U.S. air support to the west in Anbar, where there was very fierce fighting today in the city of Ramadi, where we're told that the militants set off at least 7 suicide bombs, maybe more, in one of the biggest attacks since they swept into large parts of Iraq in June.
So now it's on to Mosul, I suspect. What does the operation here, and again, you've said it's not over, what does the operation here suggest about the difficulty or the likelihood of taking Mosul?
Well, Mosul is a much bigger city. It is the second largest city in Iraq. It's a more complicated battleground because you're going to have Kurdish militias as well as the Shiite ones vying for influence in the aftermath. Definitely the government has been saying that the U.S.-led coalition should be taking a role. That raises the question of whether Iran will play as big of a role as it did in Tikrit. Can they work together? In Mosul, the population, from what we're told from our sources there, is very dissatisfied with the Islamic State, but there is a lot of fear in resisting them. And then there is also a sense from some people that they're almost as afraid of the government and the militias as they are of the Islamic State, that they feel caught in between two groups that do not care for the Sunni civilians.
Does that mean the U.S. will have to play a much bigger role to keep the sectarian divisions from exploding in the battle for Mosul?
Well, I think maybe the more pertinent question is how much influence the United States has over its Iraqi allies in how they conduct this battle. One thing that I've seen in reporting this, especially when we were on the ground with the militias near Tikrit last week, is a sense of pride that Iraqis are in charge of this, that Iraqis can choose who are their allies and how they would like to conduct this battle. Short of having boots on the ground, it's hard to see how the United States can really decide how things go on a granular level in the battle.
Great stuff. Anne Bernard, Beirut Bureau Chief for our partner, the New York Times, reporting for us from Baghdad. Thanks so much, Anne.
Thank you, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.